this week we are very excited to have some special guests to give us the rules. We write what could be some of our favorite stories so far, and we figure out just how far gnomes will go to get some tea and biscuits. So if you're in for a good laugh, or you're just here to try and find out what science feelings is, we think we have just the show for you. Hello, I am Adam Ganon.
And I'm Philip Hall.
And you are listening to The Rules, a podcast in which Phil and I brainstorm, write, and discuss stories, which we then present and dissect in the episode.
The stories we write are based on a set of rules that we must follow.
So this week we have some very special guests to give us the rules, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
My name is Jake Sujiko. I'm a radio producer, and I also co-produce New Heads for New People. It's a show about science feelings.
My name is Malcolm Rosenthal. I am a biologist, and I also co-produce the podcast New Heads for New People, which is a storytelling podcast about science feelings.
So they are from, by far, one of my favorite podcasts, and they took time out of their busy schedules to talk to me about their experience in podcasting. At the end, they were kind enough to give us some rules for this episode. They make the podcast New Heads for New People, which is about
science, but like, you know, science feelings.
Yeah. It's about science, but it's also about almost everything else around the science. The lives of the scientists, things outside the lab, things like that. As you already heard, they describe it as science feels.
So New Heads for New People is great at presenting the stories and emotions where it may be easy to assume there are none. It's a delightful experience, and I love this podcast.
It's a great podcast, and they've given us some great rules, but I'm going to let Jackie and Malcolm tell those to you.
Here are the rules.
You must pick three of the following. You must end your story with the line, "All that for a cup of tea."
You must include a communication breakdown.
You must include a broken promise.
You have to write a story without gender pronouns.
And you have to start the story with all of your characters upside down.
All right, so we need to pick three of these. So what three stick out to you?
I love the idea of having a story begin with everyone upside down.
Yeah, I really like that one too.
I love the challenge of not using gender pronouns. That's something we've never done.
I like it. I'm going to say this, though. I think I've already said this to you. Super hard for us to do in our format of 15 minutes. I'm going to toss that out there.
Okay, I can see that. I definitely think that I'm like up for it. For whatever reason, I feel really confident about that one.
Okay, but we can definitely try that one.
We don't need to either. What are the other ones? Communication breakdown. What is a communication breakdown? Let's break down the communication breakdown.
So it'd be like if I said, I know exactly a communication breakdown. One time someone texted me and said, "Hey Adam, would you be interested in a free barbecue?" And I thought they meant that I got to like go with them to a barbecue and hang out. And I said, sure. And then they showed up at my apartment with an actual physical barbecue that they were giving to me.
Right.
That's a communication breakdown. Something is not communicated properly.
You use that barbecue though.
I used it. Yeah. I love that barbecue.
I never used it.
Like a son.
The broken promise is interesting. Have we done a broken promise ever?
Nope. Not to my knowledge.
I didn't think
we've never done it as a rule for sure.
Here's how I'm feeling. The story begins with everyone upside down.
Yeah.
You must write about a broken promise.
Yeah.
You must end the story with the phrase, "all for a cup of tea." I think those three paint a really like clear picture of how a story could go.
Yeah. That's an interesting series too, because we have the beginning and we have the end and we have to paint in between.
And the broken promise could be the in between, or it could be a flashback. Either way.
Lock it in.
Okay. So let's say it this way. The story must begin with everyone upside down.
We must end the story with the phrase, "all that for a cup of tea."
And we must write about a broken promise.
And bonus points if you can do it without using gender pronouns. All right. Do you have any ideas for stories right off the bat?
I think it would be very fun to write a, not fantasy story, very similar, a fairy tale story with gnomes, maybe dwarves, fairies, etc. They're all in this little cutesy boat going down this river that's in this like lively pink cave with golden stalactites, and they're going along, they're on a journey, and the scene starts with them going over a waterfall flipping the boat and falling through the air upside down.
I like that. It's funny to start it as they've already gone over the edge of the cliff. They're suspending in the air. They're about to hit and they're still arguing with each other, maybe. Because it's, you can easily introduce character traits because like things come out when you're under stress, things about you that maybe you don't want other people to know. So you quickly get to know these characters by how they're reacting to this situation where they are falling over this waterfall.
As soon as I saw these rules, all of the rules together, I immediately had this clear idea of the story, and I thought we had to write with all five rules.
No.
And I was ready. I was like, I got this.
How's the cup of tea work into that? I'm curious.
They were going down the river to the waterfall, to the cavern below, all for a cup of tea, obviously.
Okay.
Or it could be, it's a boat full of, we'll say, gnomes, and they're going down the river, but they're going on a family, or they're on vacation for a family reunion.
Yeah.
And it's a tea party.
So imagine it's a dark night. You're looking up at the sky, and blazing across the sky, you see a airplane which is going down, and the airplane is inverted. Like if you've ever seen the movie Flight.
No, I have never seen the movie Flight.
Shame. Guy lands an airplane upside down.
Really?
Yeah.
That's stupid.
No. And not according to this movie. But in this plane, upside down right now, along with all the passengers, is a super spy. And he says, excuse me, everyone, please, if you'll stay in your seats. And he gets out and he has an epic fist fight with this guy while they're upside down in the air. And then it crashes and he's British, as all great super spies are.
Of course.
And he says something about all that for a cup of tea. So a spy upside down in an airplane is the first idea I got when I thought of
it. That's pretty good.
And he crashes into your guy's boat.
They're in a cave, Adam.
He crashes. It goes right through the hole of the cave and goes...
You're overestimating how big this cave is, but that's fine. You're
underestimating how small this plane is.
That's good.
Other idea I thought of was everyone starting upside down, roller coaster. Just going to toss that out there.
That's a great beginning, actually. Especially if it's a very sadistic kind of roller coaster. So everyone on it is like terrified and it's just beginning. It's the wheeling roller death coaster.
I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah. And there's axes that come down and try and chop you and swinging flames.
The broken promises at the beginning. There's a large sign that says, definitely will not die on this ride.
Wait, does that mean every character dies on the ride?
Maybe. Except for the carny who's working it. And at the end, he gets his payment, which is a cup of tea. And he's so devastated by all the lives lost. And he says, all that for a cup of tea. An easy way to automatically make it so everyone can start upside down is make everyone like vampires. And so they're upside down like bats. Very really easy fun. Way to add it in. So the exact same story, except for it's a vampire inventor.
Here's one. I actually like this a lot. In the forest, there's a man who rides the motocross bike. And then imagine like classic 80s film. Music. Yeah. The guy like rips off his helmet with his blonde hair flowing around his chillingly handsome face, and he promises to his girl he's gonna come back alive. Oh yeah, and the whole story can start with him upside down on his motocross bike doing this awesome flip. Anyway,
I like it. It's very like, 80s.
Yeah, he's like, don't worry, babe, I'll be back. And I'll bring the tea drinker's head on a spit. He's trying to like take down this like this King Cole kind of tea.
King Cole? It's an evil guy living in this forest.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's great.
King Cole is a brand. Or maybe it's not. Maybe
I like it, but I feel like maybe you could put more Shrek references in there. Like, I don't know. Like, you didn't even mention Shrek once. Donkey isn't in there.
Do you like Shrek?
No. I just feel like Shrek sells.
Shrek does sell. That's why there are 16 Shrek movies.
Yeah. Another idea I had for this would be, I've been enjoying Indiana Jones lately and kind of thinking about the fact that there aren't many stories being told similar to that, kind of adventure stories where it's someone looking for something in temple trekking and going through and looking at all these clues. So it could start, and the only character in it is this archaeologist who is upside down, or some sort of explorer who's upside down as he's rappelling down into this cavern. And then the story is just him going through this series of traps. And then he gets to the end. And then instead of it being the idol on this thing, it's just a cup of moldy old tea. And he says, all that for a cup of tea.
He drinks it too.
Oh yeah, he drinks it. Yeah. It'd also be funny if in the end he thinks he gets it, but then what's that on the ceiling? It's a vampire.
Okay. I actually have another one.
Okay.
So we start our story off, Adam, as a fly, not on the wall, but on the ceiling, upside down. And he has his little fly armor on, and he's devising a fly war strategy. And he promises to his people, his fly people, he's like, we will defeat the ants, for they have taken that cup of tea, and it shall be ours. That will be our tea kingdom. And he gets his fly buddies ready for war, and they attack this cup of tea, and the ants, they obliterate the flies for some reason. They have stronger weapons.
That's an intense story.
I know.
I gotta say this, Manifest Destiny.
Oh, that's good.
Just name of the episode.
And of course, the general, the fly, he's lying there hurt, dying from the battle, and he says to himself, all that for a cup of tea. Another great beginning, a troll holding someone upside down.
Everyone needs to be upside down.
I know, but he could be holding two people upside down.
But the troll's a person. The troll is part of it.
Okay, he's upside down holding them upside down.
Then they're upside right.
Not necessarily. Let's say
he's upside down.
He's on his back
and he's
over a ledge.
Okay, yeah.
And he's, that he's makes sense. Saving them by their feet.
Oh, that's very interesting. I like this.
And the whole story could then be upside down, where he's trying to get them back up safely on the ledge, and they're being jerks, and they're like, oh, let us drop. You suck.
And he's talking to them, and he's saying, no, I'm never going to give you up. I'm never going to let you down. And then that's when the music starts.
It's true. Are you calling him a troll?
Yeah, that works. People who troll do that, and that's a Rickroll, and it's perfect. That's a perfect story.
But if either of us write that story, we're going to have to Rickroll our listeners, and I don't think that's fair.
I think it's funny. Okay. I really like the troll idea. I also really like the spy idea.
Spy idea is fun. It's fun to write satire of like James Bond-esque stories. Is that your idea?
Kind of, but I don't want to do it because I need to do a British accent when I recorded in theory. And I don't want to take that hassle on.
Oh, I feel that.
Yeah.
They're incredibly hard to pull off.
Yeah, and to do properly and then air it.
I like the idea of someone jumping off. Not off, fully off a cliff, but jumping over the edge to grab two other people.
Yeah.
Or something, or another person.
One of the things that this kind of does is it forces us to be mid-action, which is something we usually try and do, where we come up with a story and we cut out the first part of the story and we start in the middle of the story, kind of. And this is interesting because it forces us to do that, because in order for them to be upside down, something has to have already happened.
Yeah. All the time I write about 100 words before the legitimate entrance to the story.
Right.
I then cut those 100 words.
Right.
It helps me get into a mindset. But you're right, mid-action always works really well.
Yeah. All right. So I know the story I'm going to do. A little bit of one of my ideas, a little bit of one of your ideas. So we cut in and we see a knight who is carefully upside down, rappelling down a cavern. And he looks up and yells,
gargantuan oaf, I told you to help. What are you doing?
Help it.
The knight stared up at the ogre's face, grinning down at him, its body slung over the edge.
I told you to stay on the ledge and rappel me down. Why are you... Ah!
The knight screamed as a dollop of green and brown saliva dripped from the ogre's festering mouth and directly onto him. He immediately feared the stench of the brute's spit would be impossible to remove, and made a note to see his sorcerer slash dry cleaner after the ordeal.
Easier this way.
Just let me down.
The knight felt a jerk, and his descent continued. He was hanging upside down, his face towards the ground, and rope around his ankles. His sword was drawn and ready to strike. He hit the ground face first,
Stop! Stop! His body fell tangled to the floor as the ogre dropped the rope. You idiot! I didn't say drop, I said stop!
Very hard to hear. Blood rushed ahead.
Listen. Stay here. I'm gonna go in, get the item, and come out.
On way down, was the reply he got.
No, you stay there.
Right.
Please, have a rope ready for me when I get back. Promise me you'll get one. A moment of silence.
Okay.
The knight sighed and turned down the corridor. On each side were depictions of beasts dismembering adventurers, and great unknown evils ascending from the abyss. He shuddered at the thought of all the occultists who had made the cave carvings in return for exposure, which was still worthless, even for an occultist. He stepped over the first two stones and started reciting the rhyme in his head. The first two stones you always miss. Step left once, twice, thrice, and don't fear the mist. Hop over plates with names of planets you see. Do not light the torches divisible by three. And finally at once you'll seal your prize. Do not be greedy. Choose with heart, not with eyes. He looked up after he finished the last of his gymnastic trekking and saw it. The table. The feast. Legend of the Grenoian feast were well known, but now he was looking at it. Each of the numerous, delicious-looking items spread across the table were said to have magical abilities. He closed his eyes and approached. He knew where the chalice was supposed to be. He reached out his hands and felt the smooth surface.
Sir Knight, so glad to see you!
He opened his eyes to see that wicked spider descending, its morbid face leering at him upside down.
You again?
I didn't think you'd.
He had no time for witty banter and sudden revealing of plans. He turned and ran, much to the spider's dismay, who had stayed up all night writing a menacing monologue. He hopped back over the plates and dodged the traps of before. He could hear the clacking of the eight-legged creature chasing him. He neared the opening where he descended.
No, 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 no!
The rope was nowhere in sight. He turned, drew his sword, and swung it just in time to dismember one of the legs of the spider as it jumped. It screeched and writhed as it retreated. It scurried up a wall and onto the ceiling until it was above him and dropped. He rolled and lashed, nicking its body. It scuttled away and climbed up the far wall.
You foolish knight! If you'd think I'd allow you to escape with...
The ogre's large body crashed to the ground, thoroughly flattening the spider who had just moved into the perfect point of trajectory. The knight sighed a sigh of relief and slumped against the wall.
Sorry, me no find rope.
That's okay, you still helped enough.
How we get out?
Oh, I don't think that'll be a problem, the knight said, unable to withhold a grin. He raised his hand to show the magic chalice he'd procured.
No thanks, no thirsty, the ogre replied.
No, you fool, this is our way out.
Cup of tea?
The knight looked down at the chalice to see it was not the chalice. When he'd closed his eyes to ensure the last part of the riddle was complete, he'd grabbed the wrong item. He felt a headache coming on and a wave of nausea rolling over him. He was unsure if it was due to the ogre saliva still fresh on his clothing, or the idea that he had just gotten the wrong item.
All that for a cup of tea, he said quietly to himself. All that for a cup of tea.
Excellent story writing, Adam.
Thank you.
Funny enough, we both wrote in caves.
I think that's because we both kind of talked a lot about being in caves.
Oh, so yeah.
It was inevitable.
And my D&D group is in a cave. So, you know, that's just
like
how
it is. Like, you play D&D in a cave?
Yep.
You guys go into the woods and climb into
funny
the little
enough,
cavern?
Funny enough, we almost did that. We were going to...
Really?
Well, not literally. We were going to have a room where we put stalactites and stalagmites all over with paper mache and create a little D&D room. Never happened. Would have been great.
Kind of cool, yeah.
Indeed.
So what do you got for me?
I went with the story idea of the family reunion, the cave passage, you know, a river running through a cave.
Yeah.
And two gnomes sitting on a boat on their way to the family reunion. Tam looked sheepishly at Bo. Bo did not look impressed. Upside down, falling straight towards a dark, billowing lake. You said there were no waterfalls, Bo yelled. I could have sworn there weren't, Tam yelled back, Well, there are, Beau yelled, racing for the surface of the lake below. The two gnomes hit the water, promptly followed by the pink rowboat they'd only just launched off the edge of the waterfall. Beau came up first, spitting water from their mouth and glancing around for Tam. You said it would be a short boat ride! You said there would be tea! And biscuits! Tam's head popped under the water, and they looked around. The boat had splintered on some rocks that the gnomes had narrowly avoided. Beau began to grunt and swim towards shore, all the while tugging the food pack. I told you, Tam, we never should have come down this way. I can't believe you convinced me to sail down the Cave of Waterfalls. It has no rapids. It has no falls. I mean, of course the Cave of Waterfalls has waterfalls. I could have sworn it was safe. No matter. We're nearly to the family reunion, Tam retorted as they pulled themselves from the lake. Beau reached down a begrudging hand to help Tam out of the lake, and they both turned and watched as the boat began to sink into the dark lake of the cave. That was a fine boat. Was a nice boat. And what now, Tam? What are we supposed to do now? Just hold on a minute. Tam reached into their soaking bag and grabbed a handful of mushy papers. I guess the map didn't like the water so much, Beau said, crossing their arms and stalking down the edge of the lake. All around them were steep cliffs, all the way up to the top. The lake, it would seem, was where the sailable part of the cave had ended. Up ahead, in the center of the circular lake, a whirlpool sucked down what was left of their boat. I don't think there's any way out of here, Beau said, turning to face Tam again. Look! Tam held up a tiny ink-stained piece of map. What's that supposed to be? Beau asked. There's safe passage up on the mouth of a waterfall that leads directly to the family cottage, Tam said. Are you serious? That's a piece of garbage! There's no way you can tell that the trail goes on! Tam hushed Beau and looked up towards the top of the falls. Sunlight shone dimly from the tunnel and stretched out above the waterfall, dancing on the mist. Tam turned to Beau and began grabbing the soaked bags from the ground. We've got to go back up. Get your climbing boots, Beau. I left them at home. You said we were sailing to the family tea party. Always be prepared. That's what the grandparents taught us, eh? Tam said, winking dramatically. Tam pushed on ahead, and Beau reluctantly grabbed a hold of a stalagmite and pushed themselves upward. All this for a cup of tea, Beau mumbled. And that, my friend, is the story of the two gnomes. I don't know how they're related, because they live in a very gender-neutral society, so they just call each other comrade. I'm joking, not comrade.
They've either got to be cousins or they've got to be brothers, because they have the same grandparents.
That's true. They're cousins.
They're cousins.
Just like you and
just
me.
Just like us. If no one knew, me and Phil are cousins. I thought the exact same thing that the other one thought, though, which is why would he bring his climbing boots with him? That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I thought the dialogue between the two characters was absolutely hilarious.
Thank you.
I gotta check. Going in, was the main thing you wanted to show in this story the dialogue and kind of the interaction between the two characters?
Absolutely. Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, that is exactly what I intended to do. I'm not just making that up. For once, I had a clear image that the whole story was really about those two interacting.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly Beau getting angry.
Yep.
And the rest of the situation was just to meet the requirements of the rules.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's when you're writing something like this, it's difficult because like with a normal story, you need to set up a conflict, something that's happening that gets resolved. With this, nothing really gets resolved. Like they fall off a cliff and then they're still kind of stuck at the bottom of the cliff when the story ends. The whole point is just them talking with each other and arguing and just being hilarious.
Yeah, it was super fun to write.
It seemed like it.
One thing I always forget is that fleshing out characters like that, just having two people arguing, or even if they're just getting along, they're walking down a path, it doesn't matter what they're doing, but it's really fun to just explore who they are.
Yeah.
I guess you could call that discovery writing.
Yes.
Where you just see where your mind takes you.
Yeah. And you immediately kind of can hold on to some like old tropes where it's very obvious that one of them is very kind of carefree and the other is not. Obviously, yeah. The one being carefree, the one who decided to go into the Cave of Waterfalls, which is a fantastic name, by the way.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah.
Of course there's waterfalls.
Well, I think that what Tam knew and never told Bo was you're supposed to stop before you hit the waterfalls.
Yep, that makes sense.
There's a short passage and you're supposed to take a right, but they took the left, for example.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was wondering if the ogre was the knight's first choice. Like, surely there must be a job bank and there would be other available people to work with the knight in the cave.
I gave it zero thought. It's just one of those things where I've planned very little of what happened before. So my idea was that maybe the knight and the ogre work together a lot. And
it's
just one of those comical situations where the knight just doesn't like the ogre, but he also secretly loves the ogre.
Yeah, totally.
And the ogre is a fantastic cook.
Another thing that could be the case is that no one is brave enough to go into the caves except the knight and the ogre because it's too dumb to know it's terrifying.
Mm, yep, that makes sense. Maybe the ogre is also the mastermind.
That's what I just thought of. I was like, maybe it's not that dumb.
So there probably was other options out there.
Absolutely. There always are. Yeah. But I think ogre, like, as far as strength goes, the ogre was a good choice, maybe.
Yeah.
But in reality, there's some problems there.
Yeah. If he had your two gnomes with him and they fell off the cliff, they wouldn't have crushed that spider, man. That was a big spider. They would have bounced off. So I've got to check. What was it like writing without gender pronouns?
I've been in a mindset lately where I've been attempting to reduce my gender pronouns. For example, I work in a coffee shop and all day long, every time I see a dude in quotations, I'm just like, hey man, how are you, man? What's up, dude?
Right.
All those, I've been cutting those out because I realize there are situations where I can actually offend people. If they have a gender that I just simply don't understand, I don't want to be the person that is calling them man. So I've been slowly reducing that and trying to just be a little more neutral. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting, frankly. Right. And I was very happy to try writing in this format.
I feel like it would be one that would be very easy to do in third person with a narrator who is not in the action. Because all the times when you were describing, this was in third limited, and when you said they, and sometimes you would say they referring to a single person, but it seems like you were referring to both of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it makes it, if you, like a very posh voice, they swam towards the edge of the shore.
I tried to make it so that those miscommunications would work anyway, which was just a cheat because we don't have all that much time to write or edit, but it worked out, I think. Oh yeah, what was the power that the chalice possessed? Like, how was it going to save them from the bottom of a cave?
No idea. Teleportation of some sort.
But is that the only thing it does?
It does all kinds of things. It's magical, Philip.
So the chalice is like the all-powerful chalice.
Yeah.
What would it have looked like, Adam, rather than a T?
So, you know, in Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail, when he goes and there's all of those mugs and cups, not mugs, when there's all those chalices, and then there's one that's very plain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the far left, there's one encrusted in jewels and it looks exactly like that. But yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. It has magical abilities. Maybe it gives you three wishes and their first wish is going to be to get themselves out of the cave.
Terrible use of wishes.
I have no idea. The point is, though, is that it doesn't matter what it does because they didn't get it.
True that. I mean, true that. That is the truth of that.
The truth of the matter, though, is what are these gnome family gatherings like?
Very subdued, and they get a little, like, drunk and disorderly, but they're mostly just, like, talking. They're, like, gossiping about the last family dinner and how bad it was, and they're all complaining about their aches and pains. The gnomes, these gnomes, this particular family of gnomes, they're very, like, salty people. Salty? You know, they're not having a good time at these family reunions. The best part is the tea, by far. Their great grand person. Their great grand person makes the best tea.
And that's why Tam the one who got convinced to go? That's why he was going. Just the chance that he might have his great grandperson's tea.
Grandperson. I'm going to call my grandmother and grandfather grandpersons.
A single entity.
Yeah.
Together, they're more powerful than they ever were separate. They can bake more cookies, provide more snuggles.
Playing golf while simultaneously knitting a sweater?
Can we defeat them?
No.
So I like in your story when you hinted that there was a relationship between the spider and the knight. So what was that? You know, like, what's the purpose of those backstories?
Good, nothing. There.
You just did it for fun.
The point with each of these things, too, is... The point is that it doesn't matter what it is. It just matters that it adds this level of intrigue. It adds this level of thing where the knight can look and say, that's the evil spider. And we just trust the knight. We're like, of course it's the evil spider. It's Nemesis. But we know nothing about this spider.
Yeah.
I have one last question. So I really liked your description of the interior of that cave. It felt very, I think it's the sunlight going down, hitting off the mist. That's when I really felt like I was in that cave.
Absolutely.
Feeling that water on my face. Was that on purpose? Did you sculpt that cave for me?
Oh, absolutely. But it was on the go. No plans, just, free rolling. I had an image of what the cave looked like. I realized at some point that I had to write it. That is the point at which Bo gets angry, crosses arms, walks away, watches the boat sink, and then describes the room momentarily.
You know how the story should have ended?
Don't say
that. It should have been a surprise party.
Oh!
For Tam, all these gnomes jump up like, happy birthday! Yeah, you thought we forgot. No, we just tried to kill you, man.
You mean for Bo?
For Bo.
The grumpy one.
Yeah. Is he the one who was not expecting to go over a waterfall?
Exactly.
Okay, for Bo, yeah.
Know what's so funny about this? But do not be greedy. Choose with the heart, not with the eyes. Right?
Yep.
It didn't work. This guy still picked the wrong thing.
Oh, I forgot to mention that. But maybe he didn't. Who knows what magical... I don't know what the chalice does. I also don't know what the tea does. Maybe that was... He thought he needed the chalice, but in the end, he needed the tea. And we just haven't got to see that part of the story yet.
Oh, maybe the spider widow is like crying down in the cave. And she's like, my husband is dead because of you. And then he's like, I have some tea. That's all he's got. And she eventually, 50 years later, she forgives him, and they all make the way to the surface as old spider ogre and man. So that is all the time we have this week. We're gonna wrap things up. A big thanks to Malcolm and Jackie from New Heads for New People for helping us out. You can find their podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you get access to the grand archive of podcasts out there.
Grand archive.
You can find them on their website, www.newheadsfornewpeople.com. All one word, all lowercase. If you like yourself, go check them out. Ooh, it's a low blow, isn't it? If you like yourself, if you even have a little bit of self-respect...
If we've ever neglected to do any prompts you think might be good, let us know. We tweet at The Rules Podcast. You can reach us there, and you can also send us jokes and anything else you might think will make our day.
Or, you can like our Facebook page. You can find that under The Rules Podcast. I don't know what people do on Facebook anymore, but you can certainly like our page.
Our website is therulespodcast.com. Also, if you liked what you heard, we would love if you would take the time to give us a rating and a review on iTunes. Reviews help us gain more followers and proves to our mothers that we aren't failures.
Mom, look what we're doing!
We have over 2 listeners each week!
Dave Kiney is our show strategist, assistant producer, and the way back up from the bottom of a steep cliff.
This episode was produced by me, Adam Ganong.
And co-produced by me, Philip Hall.
All original art for the show has been created by Philip Hall.
And music, sound effects, and general audio molding is done by Adam Ganong. Ooh, how many times can we say our own name?
Let's go. Adam Ganong.
I didn't count. You guys, if you counted, tweet.
Hashtag name count. Get at us.
Hashtag name count. It's a new viral trend. Count your own name.
We appreciate you guys listening in yet again. We hope we have not disappointed. We will see you next week.
Thank you. Take care. Did you write Shrek?
I wrote Shrek.
Adolescent Shrek is helping Donkey down to the...
I'm going to have to go back and re-record it and add in the proper voices. You gargantuan hoof, I told you to help. What are you doing? Helping.